For more than 25 years, TV viewers have been captivated by reality television, watching real people in supposedly unscripted events. Author Lucas Mann is not immune to this guilty pleasure. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In Lucas Mann's latest book, Captive Audience, on love and reality TV, he analyzes this pop culture phenomenon and reflects on what his fascination with it says about his reality. All of that is wrapped around a love letter to his wife. I'll talk with him. Then later in the hour, the new nonprofit Ag Arts is devoted to promoting a healthy food system through the arts. I'll talk with founder Mary Swander. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, the new nonprofit Ag Arts is devoted to promoting a healthy food system through the arts. I'll talk with one of the founders, Mary Swander. But first, reality television. Many people got their first taste of this kind of reality with MTV's The Real World, which came on the air in 1992. Author Lucas Mann has watched a lot of reality television over the years, and his latest book, Captive Audience on Love and Reality TV, analyzes this pop culture phenomenon, and he also reflects on what his fascination with it says about his own reality. He'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 p.m. He's here with me in the studio right now. Welcome back to the show, Lucas.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be back.
Tell me when you first became interested in reality TV.
As a viewer, I think it was always. I think I'm of sort of maybe the exactly perfect generation for it. I was 6 years old when The Real World first aired. And so the sort of like illicit thing that I would try to watch, you know, after my parents went to bed or whatever when I was a kid was The Real World and then sort of various spinoffs in that universe. And then I was in high school in sort of the early 2000s, which was kind of this reality TV boom moment. And so it just sort of feels like something that for whatever reason has its hold on the culture has coincided exactly with my existence as a cultural citizen, I guess.
So, all right, staying up late, sneaking in to watch the Real World on MTV. What were some of the other shows that you really felt drawn to as a young person?
There's a part in the book where, and I don't think when I started writing the book, I was mostly just sort of thinking about shows that I'd watched recently and this sort of shared experience of watching these shows with my wife. And I wasn't thinking that much in terms of like these going far back autobiographical things. Mm-hmm. But then in sort of thinking about what it felt like to watch The Real World or even, and these shows were sort of different in their, I don't think you'd call them reality TV in a modern sense, but the sensations that I remember most in terms of really caring about watching things when I was really young was like watching American Gladiators coming home from school or watching Cops when I would stay at my grandmother's house or whatever. And so there was always this weird something about that sense of something in these shows that were so intense and stylized and weird also being theoretically documentary in some way, right? The stakes of these people existing, whatever the scenario was contrived around them. I didn't realize it really until I started writing the book that was something that I'd been watching for always.
You know, I think a lot of us are familiar with reality television right now. It's everywhere, constantly. But talk about the origins of this idea, because it was documentary that really inspired the idea of reality television.
Yeah, it's really hard to sort of hammer down any kind of actual origin point for reality TV because the term is so nebulous and you know, in the book I use it as like a really blanket term to talk about a lot of shows that are really different in a lot of ways and there's so many subgenres now. So it's hard to sort of go back and find exact entry points, but things that sort of had these elements to it or were referred to in similar ways, you know, go all the way back to hidden camera shows and these weird sort of look at what these real people are doing variety shows, like That's Incredible in the 70s. And then maybe most famously or specifically An American Family on PBS in the early 70s, which was kind of like the precursor for the real world. And real world producers even sort of referenced it as their model when they started with the show. And it was this, at the time, sort of wild idea of they were just going to find a sort of upwardly mobile, upper middle class, white American family in California and sort of follow them. And it started with these documentary ideals, right? That the guy who started the show had worked with Margaret Mead forever and was sort of coming out of this anthropological documentary world. But then I think what a lot of people remember from that show, and I know my parents remember it, talking to them about it, were all these things that are sort of now the hallmarks of reality TV, when the parents end up going through divorce and everything's falling apart and there are these sort of nasty fights that are captured on camera. And that was close to 50 years ago that this sort of captured people's attention.
Well, and now thinking back to the early Real World episodes, I mean, that feels more like documentary compared to so much of what we see now. For people who don't remember, here's just a few seconds of the introduction to MTV's The Real World.
This is the true story.
True story.
Seven strangers picked to live in a loft
and have their lives taped
to find out what happens.
What? When people stop being polite. Could you get the phone?
And start getting real.
The real world.
And in some of those early seasons of The Real World, I mean, there was some real groundbreaking television happening. We were really seeing some pretty incredible stuff, weren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were these sort of famous moments of the HIV positive character who was on the show. And I think it was in 94, or maybe it was the first. It was in the very early 90s. But it was this you were watching an actual human being live their life dealing with something that was so much in the zeitgeist at the time, but you didn't really see people in this personal way living with that illness. And he was there. And yeah, there was a ton of really important sort of sociological things happening. One thing that I think is interesting in terms of the whole history of anything that could be called reality TV, it was critically scorned always. And people always spoke with nostalgia about, like, remember a purer time? Like, that just seems to be part of the tradition, is that people looked at The Real World at a certain point and said, or there was even people looked at later seasons of The Real World, like we're doing now, and said, remember the early Real World when it was important? Or then you talk to reality producers now who used to work on The Real World, and they sort of talk about, remember back in the day when we were really sort of doing documentary stuff in The Real World? I've even heard people reference the Kardashians with a certain amount of nostalgia compared to shows that came more recently. So I do think that part of the tradition is this sort of weirdly pleasurable hand-wringing of there must have been a better time. You know, I lived through a time when we weren't lying, when we were doing real documentary. And I think in some ways that's true, but that's definitely part of the form.
Well, it's hard to imagine that. But yes, we are thinking back to The Real World and feeling a little bit nostalgic right now. You clearly have a love for reality TV. You've watched a lot of reality TV. When did you decide to kind of take it on in your work as a scholar? When did you decide that you'd try to look at it in this different way?
It's been sort of simmering for a long time. Actually, I think sort of the origin story maybe happened in Iowa City when I still lived here. And I was at a reading for a novelist that I really loved. And he was touring behind his second book. And there was a conversation around it where somebody said, you know, one thing I love about this book is that it takes place in modern day, but there's no way to tell, right? It's not sort of saddled with that baggage. And then there was this sort of conversation in the room about timelessness or whatever, right? And the sense of literature being this high art that isn't time stamped with this petty stuff. And I think he even used the phrase something to the effect of, like, you know, you don't want to write a novel where people have to read about Britney Spears having a breakdown on TV. And I was in the crowd and I was like, I really do
want to
read that novel. I think it interests me, this idea of taking something that is so ubiquitous in people's lives, whether it's reality TV for me or whatever sort of TV that people watch and don't like to talk about watching, that you spend a lot of hours doing and that you have, that's a huge part of your life and you feel connected to. But then you write that off as sort of wasted time or time that isn't reflective of you or what you're actually interested in or how you live. And more, I just sort of thought that can't be true. This is part of my lived experience. And so it sort of became this challenge to try to write in ways that felt honest or authentic or sincere or even sort of intellectual or emotionally real about this part of my life that it would be really easy to write off as sort of detached from any of the good parts.
So you you include your wife in this book in a really lovely way, but you also, you know, you talk about your relationship and the time that the two of you have spent sitting on the couch watching reality shows together. And I think about the time you spent here at the Writers' Workshop in Iowa City, surrounded by intellectuals. There are, you know, some, it's a pretty competitive environment. Some might say elitist environment. Did you ever feel shame about watching these shows? Did you have to try to hide your interest in reality TV at any point?
Yeah. And also, like, you, when my wife and I lived here, you know, you don't make a ton of money on a graduate stipend from the university, but like part of that money went to a cable bill, which felt like I do think that I was maybe the only person in my cohort doing that. And so our house became both a place where people could come to watch TV, but also like a weird place where TV was watched, I think. I definitely felt that. But, you know, I mean, when I was here, I was writing about baseball a lot.
Yeah.
And even that felt, the idea of sort of being like, oh, minor league baseball has something important to say about the world, that felt sort of, it had an uneasy relationship with the sort of ethos of the Iowa writing
program. Did you feel like the black sheep of the writing program at that point?
I think in ways that I'm probably not proud of as a person, there's something exciting to me and maybe motivational to me about trying to enter things that could easily be written off by the people around me into a sort of highbrowish conversation, I guess. I've always sort of liked that challenge.
So tell me a little bit about how you and your wife watch reality TV together. What's the experience like?
So one thing, too, is, and I've also found this out sort of talking to people about the book, is that I think maybe more than any other form of TV, it seems to be really a social one. I was talking to somebody about it, and almost in the same way that, like, you don't want to drink alone. You don't necessarily want to watch reality TV as much alone. So I don't think I fully realized when I started writing it how much of a thing that is, that people have these sort of shared shows, and mm-hmm. then it becomes a conversation about the people that are having these conversations on the show. And that's just sort of always been part of our dynamic. We went to college together, and by the end of our college experience, the Kardashians was starting to be a thing. And we would sit in the place where she lived senior year and sort of watch the Kardashians and be like, what is happening? This feels like new and bizarre, but talking about it was something that we liked to do. And then going on the sort of like early reality TV blogs that were talking about the Kardashians, it just sort of felt like a topic of conversation. Like,
but
this,
even watching it was a very interactive.
Yeah.
Shouting at the TV, hiding your face.
Yeah. Right. I think it begs that, right? One of the things that really interests me as a writer is maybe there being some permeability between like the text that you're analyzing and your lived experience. And so more and more when I was writing this, it felt like, sure, I'm writing about these shows that we watch, but also if we're watching a marathon of these shows that's on for 2 hours or something, we're getting up and talking to each other, or if something cringeworthy happens, we're cringing, we're next to each other on the couch, our bodies are touching. If there's something uncomfortable on screen, maybe our bodies are sort of moving farther apart. There's that tension there.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Lucas Mann. His latest is Captive Audience on Love and Reality TV. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up a little later on, we'll talk about the new nonprofit Ag Arts. It's devoted to promoting a healthy food system through the arts. I'll talk with one of the co-founders. But right now, we're talking about reality television. Lucas Mann's latest book takes a look at reality television and also a look at his own life, his relationship with his wife, kind of through the lens of reality TV. The book is called Captive Audience on Love and Reality TV, and he'll be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City at 7 p.m. And just before the break, you mentioned the Kardashians and when the Kardashians first started being on television. In a way, I mean, this is the point that a lot of people point to as this is when all of society began to crumble, was when the Kardashians came on TV. And it's interesting because you've talked to your students about these shows. You asked your students to describe Kim Kardashian, and every single one of them seems to have something really disparaging to say about her. And yet she is this megastar that attracts so much attention and continues to attract that kind of attention. What do you think the Kim Kardashian phenomenon says about us?
I don't know. It's so fascinating. I mean, I do think that there's some sort of emotive connection that she is able to make, that whether what you're bringing at her is ire or not wanting to see yourself in her, or whether there's sort of something in the way that she performs her life that feels connective or indelible in your own, that there's something about the way that she's done this. And I think increasingly now the longevity of how long her family's been on TV, just sort of the weight of you're watching her, and when you watch her, you can't help but think about this has been happening for a decade. Like, I have seen so many different versions of this, and it's still happening, that there's something I don't know if you want to call it gravitas, but there's this enormous weight to how long.
I don't think I want to call it gravitas.
there's some. It's so resolute,
yeah.
Right? She's there, and she's doing this, and she has stayed relentlessly in people's minds for so long. And I don't know if you can put a good or bad value judgment on it, but I think it is it's sort of wholly unique. And the longer she's able to do this, the more that strangeness of this uncharted territory kind of weighs on how people relate to her, even if it's just easy ire towards her.
Right. Well, and the way people feel about her is interesting to me. And it maybe it's part of the attraction of reality television, because we can watch reality television and feel superior to the people that we're watching. I mean, do you think that's a big part of the attraction?
I think the schadenfreude is some of it. But I don't think it's that simple. Right. Like, I think ultimately, and I guess I can just speak for myself, I think if the one emotion was, ugh, look at this idiot, like,
right,
that
then
runs,
you wouldn't watch.
That runs out quick. So I think that maybe that is part of it, and it's definitely part of it. But scholars who have written about reality TV, I think, point to really this interesting dynamic of sort of how active it can be to watch it, and that you kind of have to be negotiating yourself in relationship to it. So maybe there's the, I'm so glad that's not me, or, ooh, I hate that person, I would never do that. But then there's also the, maybe I would do that, or would I do that if I were in that situation, or would I want that? Or how come this person has this thing that I don't have, when they don't seem more deserving than me? And so I think, sure, a lot of it can be that schadenfreude, but you can't not negotiate yourself in relationship to the image. And particularly if you're someone who watches it, there has to be something going off in your mind of, do I believe this? Am I a sucker for believing this? Am I a sucker for liking this? What am I doing here? Why am I interested in her if in some ways I can write her off so easily?
I want to play a little bit of a clip from The Real Housewives of Atlanta. This is one of your favorite reality series and one of your favorite characters on reality TV. Here's just a taste of NeNe Leakes.
This is an event for the most fabulous ladies in Atlanta, like me and Sheree and Kim. I don't know Phaedra that well, but what I've seen of Phaedra, I ain't never seen fabulous. I see Plain Jane from Athens, but when we talk about fabulosity, I don't see it.
All right, she doesn't see her fabulosity. You get NeNe's fabulosity, though. What is it about this character that appeals to you? You could not be more different.
Sure. Yeah. I think in a different way than Kim Kardashian, I do think that it's sort of whatever this quality of watchability is. And she's also been on TV for a really, really, really long time. And there's just something relentless about it to me. Like, one of the things that's amazing about particularly these sort of docu-soap kind of reality shows, where the conceit isn't like, I'm a trucker, or I'm going to teach you how to paint the house. It's just like, I'm living my life, and I'm telling you that my life is important and you're watching it, is that it's like this kind of constant audition. And so for me, you can't not be thinking about how exhausting and difficult it must be to get in front of the screen and say, look at me, over and over and over again. And it's this constant voicing of what I think we're taught to think of as like this really icky impulse, this sort of desire to show yourself off and this desire to be seen. And she does it so well, and with such volume and with such confidence over and over and over again, even if really shaming situations are thrown at her, even if she becomes a villain for a moment or not a villain, she's just sort of weathering this storm in this sort of with this all-encompassingly powerful personality that it's just kind of wild to watch.
You write about a couple of episodes in your life that were just incredibly difficult and dramatic. One was your wife was in a terrible bicycle accident and her back was broken. And in reflecting on that, you also write about being aware of how you looked, how people might see you in that situation. And I'm sure that's something we've always done. But when you earlier said how Kim Kardashian is performing her life, do you feel like our awareness of reality TV, our interaction with social media, do you think that more of us are performing our lives instead of living them, or in addition to?
Sure. I think in addition to, maybe. I think it's really hard to parse those lines. And I think increasingly as more outlets are there for the performance, yeah, it's really hard to know where those lines begin and end. And again, I think one of the things that is so intense about watching reality, and is also why it's so easy to deride it, is that they make this really uncomfortable thing to think about for all people of how aware am I of what I'm living and feeling as I'm living it? How much am I doing these things because I want to be seen a certain way? They are making that the show over and over and over again. And so when you watch Kim Kardashian, you're watching in some ways like a really blown up version of kind of the nastiest things that, for me anyways, that I wonder about myself. And I do think it's really interesting, your question, that am I more that way, or are we in society more that way because we've been watching her do it for so long, or now we see people on Instagram do it? And I think that's certainly possible.
You start every chapter in the book with a letter from somebody who wants to be on a reality TV show. And I mean, some of them are funny and some of them are pathetic and heartbreaking. It's an impulse. I mean, so many people want to be seen in this way. And when I watch reality TV, okay, Amazing Race, I do fantasize a little bit about, oh, maybe I could do that.
Just for the cardio.
Right. Most of the time, I'm like, oh, why would anybody give that kind of access, make themselves that vulnerable and that much of a spectacle for what? But so many of us want it. Why do we want it so bad?
I don't know. but I do think it was important for me, right? I write in ways that are at least in some way autobiographically all the time, right? Mm-hmm. That I'm theoretically looking at something else. And I like to think of myself as a literary writer, but I'm putting myself out there, and that's part of it. And I did want to, I don't necessarily want to be on a reality show, but I did want to acknowledge the fact that I do recognize that impulse, and that maybe part of the impulse of me writing and me sort of putting myself out there in my writing isn't as far away from a reality star as I would like to think. So I at least wanted to sort of meet the weird pathology of their performances with my own a little bit. And I do think that impulse, whatever it is, has to be more recognizable for a lot of people than we would like to say that it is when we're talking about Kim Kardashian.
I'm talking with Lucas Mann. His latest book is Captive Audience on Love and Reality TV. This book is also a love letter to your wife. You write a lot about your relationship. You write about different moments in your relationship and how you interact with each other and how much you love her and how you see her. Why did you decide that your love story was going to be a part of a book that started kind of as a scholarly look at reality television?
Yeah, it did start that way. I think it sort of happened organically. Like I talked a little bit before about something really exciting to me as a writer is, instead of having the personal and then the sort of like critical that I'm analyzing this text thing be separate, it's sort of like the lived experience of looking at these texts. And as I was writing about these shows and my love of these shows, I realized that all of these were scenes between the two of us, that in some ways, in narrating the course of my adult life watching TV and thinking about reality TV, I was also narrating my life shared with this person and our emotions with each other and these moments that were just sort of our moments alone in our house that sometimes these shows were on for. And so it kind of, in a weird way, seemed inextricably linked. Like those two stories were happening in parallel all the time, and to try to separate them felt stranger than not.
How has your wife reacted to the book?
Incredibly generously.
Nice.
There's a moment in the book where I sort of talk about her reading a draft of it and then being like, this is bizarre. This is like you've been watching us and us talking about that.
Right, like an anthropologist and taking notes for our entire relationship.
Yeah. And so that was part of it. It felt at least only right to like put that in there and put that skepticism in there. But she's read multiple drafts of it, and a lot of the sort of things that the book gets at, we talk about in our lives. If she hated it, it wouldn't exist. but she has sort of been really generous about it. And I think she's an actress. And so I think a lot of these sort of things about performance and this desire to be seen and how that relates to intimacy, like she's thinking about those things too. So it's been really kind of wonderful to talk to her about it and have her read it and have her reflect on it. And also just, again, like the insane generosity of her not saying, burn this and do something else.
You do ask her about how she thinks about what she does as an actress with regard to what people on reality television do, because, we use that phrase reality, but we all know that this is a kind of a crazy manufactured reality that we're watching. How does she think about that?
Yeah, like there's a moment in the book too where she sort of pushes back on that and is like, no, you know, I love watching these shows. Like she loves these characters as well, but she doesn't see what she does as akin to it. And so then for me, that kind of became more like, I see what I do as more akin to it than she does, right? That there's something, when I watch her perform, it's a kind of performance that in some ways involves transformation, right? That the idea is getting out of yourself and into this new thing and sort of breaking free from yourself. And then so as a writer who is often sort of stuck in myself, it became sort of this reflection on how different that experience is or how much my own writing in the echo chamber of my own perspective feels in some way akin to a reality performance in ways that hers isn't.
I found it very interesting. You interacted with a number of producers or editors of reality TV. And of course, they're the ones that put together the reality that we see. But a number of them don't have any kind of a relationship with the people that we see on the screen. I mean, they're completely separate from that, which I find fascinating because it's like they're watching it like we are, and then they put together the pieces that we see. They're not involved in that reality.
Yeah, there's so many different levels of production. So like the producers that I talk to, often they are one-on-one, they're sort of more akin to this relationship that we're having right now, right? Where they're the ones saying, hey, I want you to talk about this. The camera is going to be rolling. You're going to talk about this. But then, yeah, there's different levels of producers. And then there's, I talked to one person who is an editor who, right, he's totally removed. So he's on a laptop when the raw footage comes in a place different from where the show was being filmed, with the producer saying, you need to sort of find some sort of narrative out of this raw material. And so in some ways, he felt like he was tasked with the responsibility of making any kind of coherent narrative out of this story. But he, has no actual interpersonal interaction with the people who he's sort of making into characters on TV.
So while you were doing this research and writing this book, the United States elected a reality TV star president. And we see you struggle in the last few chapters of the book with what to say or how to say anything about that, because it's, it's a whole new reality for the world. What was your reaction when you, not just to the election of Donald Trump, but in thinking, oh, we just elected a reality TV star?
Yeah. It was very strange. And I do think, the phrase guilty pleasure has never been so much more guilt and so much less pleasure at this point, I think. But the way that his origins in reality TV have been talked about, I think, are really interesting to me. And I talk about in the book that reality has always served as this very easy blanket for everything bad in society. Like, it is the explanation for everything that is becoming bad about all of us. And so that instinct has transferred over into him as a president, right? The easiest thing to say about his the things that might disturb us about him are, oh, he's our reality TV president. When sure, he is that, but he's also
our president.
He's also our president. And his roots in terms of being a person that you can find really distasteful go back to like horrible race baiting in New York in the mid 80s. Right. Or sort of feeding things to tabloids or sort of his movement spreading insane racist memes on Twitter. Right. All of these different mediums, all these different parts of his persona are part of what's gotten us here. But the reality TV thing stands out as sort of like the ultimate, he came out of what we can all agree is a cultural cesspool. So that's, it feels easy to say. I actually just published a piece for The Atlantic about the ways in which I think calling him a reality TV president in a blanket way is a little bit wrong, because I remember after the election, I was reading a lot of things saying, why shouldn't Kim Kardashian just be president, as like this ultimate insult. And I actually think that she's like a way better and different reality performer than him. And I think it's worth noting that his specific success on reality TV was in a role of a judge, right? Like, he was the only person on that show who was never criticized, who couldn't be criticized. And part of the narrative of that show was that he was successful and unimpeachable, and other people struggled and shamed themselves for his approval. But that maybe what this experience of president is now is far more akin to a Kim Kardashian's experience, where sure, you might have power, but you actually need to withstand the hellscape of people saying things about you and people constantly looking into you and making you the show and deal with that criticism. And I think that's a huge part of what reality TV is. And he was the rare kind of star that actually never had to deal with that aspect of it when he was on reality TV.
We have 30 seconds left, but it's interesting that there are a number of reality TV stars who have done really, truly terrible things in real life, in real reality. And you ask yourself, if we're watching these people, are we complicit? Are we?
I don't know. The book is much better at asking questions than it is at providing answers. I'll say that.
Oh, Lucas, man, thank you so much for talking
thank
with me
you.
Today. The book is Captive Audience on Love and Reality TV. It is a critical analysis of reality television and also a love letter to Lucas's wife. He'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore tonight at 7 p.m. in Iowa City. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about the new nonprofit Ag Arts. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.